We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than from others in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250, baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, and it is 2026. Wow, man, it's here. I mean, we've been talking about this actually for years, that the 250th is coming. 2026 is going to be an amazing year. We talked about this on the program at the close of 2025, just what an amazing year it was and how many great victories we had. Obviously, some big challenges as well, good, the bad, and the ugly, as always. But wow, what an amazing opportunity we have to rebuild liberty in America, to rejuvenate that American spirit, that patriotism that made us great in the first place, the biblical values and principles that spawned the greatest nation in the history of mankind. We've had our definite challenges, still have our challenges going forward. But wow, what a way to start 2026! I don't even think I'm going to be able to get to all this today. The things that have happened in just the last 72, 96 hours, whatever it's been, absolutely remarkable. Let me just rattle off some of them, then we'll dive a little deeper into them, and then would love to hear from you on the phones at 888-589-8846. I gotta tell you, there's a couple of these things that are, I mentioned this as we were ending 2025, that there were some things we had worked on for 25, 30 years. And then all of a sudden, overnight success, right? The old 30-year overnight success story. So many of those examples, and we talked about those closing out the year of 2025. But then just right off the bat, I mean, first thing into 2026, complete restructuring of the CDC-recommended vaccine schedule. And I start with that because I've ranted about that a lot the last few weeks. Some of you may be getting sick and tired of me talking about it. But you got to understand, this is a massive victory against the deep state. This is not just a Make America Healthy Again campaign promise fulfilled. This is a campaign promise that there's a lot of us out there going, hey, we've fought for this for decades, but can they really pull this off? Can this be done? Because let me tell you what this represents. This is the heart, or I should say the root of so much of the pain, especially of the last 5 years, but also of the last few decades, with regard to a massive transfer of wealth from regular Americans to Big Pharma, a massive amount of illness and disease not stopped by CDC or by the medical industrial complex, but actually created in order to provide a lot of business, a massive amount of deception and lies, a massive amount of pain and heartache in families from the disease and death and other problems caused by the overuse. I'm not against vaccines. I am very much a pro-science. I'm pro-vaccine. I actually think it's a medical miracle that we figured out how inoculation works and why it's a good thing when it's done correctly and it's based on science. It's not just foisted upon the American people and shoved into our babies in order to make a bunch of people rich. So this has been that the vaccine schedule itself has been sacrosanct. Oh, you don't touch that, man. You don't mess with that. If you even question anything about the vaccine schedule, you're murdering children. You're anti-public health, which actually I am anti-public health. I don't think it's public health. I think it's private health. Anyway, but you're anti-science. You're anti-saving babies. You're some Neanderthal. You ought to be living in a cave somewhere. And, you know, you never take your kids to the doctor, and you don't believe in medicine. You're one of these weird religious kooks that handle snakes all day. And I mean, that's what they treated us like. If we simply said, I got a question. Hey, just quick question before you shove, 72 doses of things into the body of my child, I would just like to know, what are the studies on each of those doses that proves that my child needs that? That in a cost-benefit analysis, it's better for my child to inject them with this substance than to let them perhaps get the disease and become stronger and immune to it for the rest of their life. Chickenpox would be a perfect example of one where that would be a logical, rational, scientific decision for a parent to make. Or Hep B. It's not likely that my child will get that disease, so therefore it doesn't make sense to take the risk of shoving that into their body at one day old when they can't even get that disease unless they have a blood transfusion or sex. So one day old baby, not likely. Anyway, it was sacrosanct. That you could not question any of these 72 doses. You certainly couldn't ask the question, excuse me, just wondering, hey, can I just take a look at that study? You know, the one that covers like all of these doses in a child. Hey, do we have a study that shows the long-term effects of what happens when we do all of these doses at once? Oh, you don't have that. Oh, you don't even have a placebo-controlled trial on any of these? I mean, to ask those questions, you were upset in the apple cart, and the medical industrial complex came after you just like they did me, and they got me. They beat me in my third race for the state legislature because of this issue. Okay, now, why am I making such a big deal out of this? Again, I know some of you long-term listeners, you're like, Rick, enough, move on. But listen to what just happened in the last few hours. By changing the schedule, and by Donald Trump actually saying the quiet part out loud, that this is insane, that there is no reason for us to be doing this many doses. He actually said, can we at least look at what the rest of the world's doing? Can we look at what the data says about what other nations do for their schedule and whether or not their children are healthier as a result of that? Or maybe it's causation, maybe it's correlation, but let's at least look at it. And then they looked at it. And then they actually used some common sense. They actually started removing people from the decision-making that had a bias, that had a, frankly, a financial incentive to lie to the American people or to look the other way or to just kind of fudge the numbers. And so as a result of this, this is a shot across the bow of the issue. I mean, you got to understand, the vaccine schedule is what was at the heart of even the COVID debacle. All of the insanity during COVID of not allowing hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin to be discussed or for doctors to even be able to share successful results they were getting with budesonide and all these other treatments, the insanity of that, the anti-science approach of that, all came back to the vaccine schedule. It all came back to the amount of money that these pharmaceutical companies were going to make if they could force everyone to get these new vaccines and they could get it into the childhood schedule so that they then would have immunity under the insane 80s law that, yes, my hero Ronald Reagan signed. So again, the vaccine schedule is at the heart of so many of these problems. This is the Dr. Frankenstein of Pope Fauci of the COVID cult religion. This is the lab where all of this bad government, it's the petri dish where all this bad government was able to grow. And so the fact that President Trump has been willing to create a seismic shift here by knocking off, I believe they went down to, I was just looking at it last night, went down to basically 11 diseases, got rid of stuff like, rotavirus, that's diarrhea, folks. Sorry, but that's what it is. I remember there being a legislator that was, frankly, came from the medical industrial complex, big hospital pharmaceutical family, and she actually had not been with me on questioning some of these things. And when rotavirus suddenly gets added to the schedule, she's like, "What? Wait, what? We're doing what? We're injecting kids with this? What is the purpose here? What is the benefit?" Anyway, so there's a removal of silly ones like that. Hep B, which was not just silly, was dangerous to be putting that into one-day-old babies without a real benefit. So the cost outweighed the benefit. I think if I read it right, they're going to go back down to 30 doses total, which is actually just getting back to where when I started this fight 30 years ago, it was 32 doses. So we're just barely getting back to square one, and then I think we need to be chipping away even at some of those, or at least making sure there is very clear choice for parents. Now, I had mentioned at the end of the year there some of the other victories in this area, like, for instance, the no longer requiring the reporting of vaccine rates from these pediatricians and others. So there's just a seismic change here that is huge. Okay, that's one. That's one, man. I was going to get to like eight things before the break, but I only got a few minutes left here. So let me just rattle off some of these other ones. So the massive victory against the deep state there. Wow, Venezuela and Iran. We could spend all day on these two. Who had those on their bingo card? Not me. I mean, look, Venezuela, this is big. We'll get into some of the constitutional questions and does Donald Trump have the authority to do this? Is this like Noriega and what Bush did in 89 or what Reagan did with Grenada in 83? What is the requirement in terms of congressional notice or permission or all of those questions? We'll get into all that. There's some good answers to all of those things. I'll just tell you up front, Trump did it right, and he's absolutely within the law to do what he did. But we'll get into some of those details, and you can call in and ask about some of those things. And I've still got some questions about some of the nuance. But overall, we're going to come back and spend more time on Venezuela because I think most of us are surprised. I am, as I learn more and more about how important Venezuela is to China and Russia. So the fact that we've got Venezuela and the arrest of Maduro, a narco terrorist who the Democrats are defending, it's so wild to me how well Donald Trump sets the Democrats up for failure. He gets them cheering and defending drug dealers, rapists, murderers, illegal aliens. Oh, but I repeat myself. He gets them defending now a narco terrorist who is an absolute thug, who they said, Chuck Schumer on the floor of the Senate said just at the end of Donald Trump's last term, why hasn't he overthrown Maduro? Okay, well, now he does it. Where's your big press conference saying, way to go, President Trump? Anyway, the whole Venezuela thing is big, big, big. And then Iran happening at the same time. Folks, this was probably the worst 3 or 4 days for our enemies, our big enemies. And let's face it, China and Russia at the top, number one, number two, Iran, number three. This was the worst week for those guys, maybe in my lifetime, which means it was a great week for us. I mean, what a great way to start 2026, to see this happening in Iran, to see what's happening in Venezuela, what could potentially happen with Venezuela in terms of being good for America instead of being a thorn in our side and a purveyor and a conduit of poison into our country. So those are huge. Then you got all this corruption being exposed. Not good that we have the corruption, but man, praise the Lord for the sunlight that is, as Bill Bennett used to say all the time, the best disinfectant to that corruption. Then you got, you know, Tampon Tim over in Minnesota running for the hills. You got this guy that was more concerned about tampons being in the boys' restroom than understanding what was happening to our country. And he's running for the hills because all of this corruption, it looks like, is very much tied to him and certainly to the Democrat Party. And not only in Minnesota, but of course it's happening all over the country. And by the way, in Minnesota, the fact that he's not going to run, I'm praying, gives a significant boost to my friend Mike Lindell, who's running for governor up there and is a fantastic disruptor. So you got all these disruptors running. Victor Marx in Colorado, great guy. Ralph Rebrandt in Michigan, another great guy, a pastor. Mike Lindell in Minnesota. I mean, there's a bunch of them all over the country. It's really cool to watch. So you got that. And then, I'll go to break with this one because you may not realize this is such good news, but listen, Marxist Mayor Mandami, this guy's a gift, folks. He's a gift. He's waking up Americans to realize just how bad socialism is. All of this stuff about collectivism and taking property rights and all, he is the inoculation to bring it back to vaccines. And Lord willing, he'll be just enough poison that it'll even wake up New York, and we can possibly get New York to turn away from socialism. So there's a lot of good happening. May look bad, some of it, but you realize what's happening underneath, and you realize what it could do for the country in 2026, and you realize we're headed into one of the best years in American history. Quick break. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. We'll be back. You're listening to At the Core.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, and I hope you're looking forward to a wonderful 2026. Let me tell you about a couple of things you might be interested in that we're going to go on. Those are tours. We call them spiritual heritage tours. We're going this year in June and September to Washington, D.C. and George Washington's Mount Vernon. We're also going to Colonial Williamsburg and the historic Jamestown settlement. Then we're going also to Boston, Massachusetts. So all those tours are coming up in 2026. The D.C. and Williamsburg trip are both in June and September, so pick the month you want to go. The Boston trip is in September. So, for all the information, the itinerary, the cost, everything you need to know about these tours, if you want to join us on a vacation with a purpose, that's what we call it, go to wildmangroup.com. W-I-L-D-M-O-N group.com is the website. Find out all the information, and we'll see you on one of our 2026 tours.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
All right, let's get back to it. This is At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Let's go back to Venezuela and Maduro first, and then any of these other topics I want to talk about, just call in and let me know which direction you want to go, and we will go there. Before I go back to Maduro, I want to clarify what I was saying about Mandami being a gift. You know, when he gets up and he says these absurd lines about the warmth of collectivism and these other things, you know, the disparaging rugged individualism, you may think that we've lost America completely, and that, you know, you see these polls, and I deal with this because of all the young people that we train, with 60% of the, you know, latest generation saying they want socialism and all this, and there are a ton of them that think they do. There's not a definition of socialism given to them in those polls. They think that just means helping grandma down the street or whatever. They don't really understand that it, you know, this warmth of collectivism killed 100 million people last century. So they're just uneducated. So when you educate them, you can tend to win them over. But I think what people don't measure right now, because it's so underneath the surface for most Americans. I'm out there in the field. I'm out there doing events in all 50 states and, you know, talking to people. So I have a pretty decent pulse on what's going on out there with real Americans. And I'm telling you, there is a massive army out there that are still what we used to call, you know, red-blooded, apple pie loving, baseball watching, Bible believing, Constitution defending Americans. They've been in many ways silenced for years. They've been mocked through our entertainment and television. They've been undermined through the universities and had their own kids and grandkids brainwashed and turned against them. But I'm telling you, they are out there. And when you say rugged individualism is bad, their hair on the back of their neck stands up, and their antenna go up, and they realize they still remember paying the price for freedom, whether they paid it in a uniform, in some trench somewhere, or just, you know, on a ship serving somewhere, and maybe they weren't even in an armed conflict, but they gave up 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 of the best years of their life for this country. Or they worked their tails off 18 hours a day, 6 days a week, like the Bible says, 6 days shalt thou labor. This 40-hour American week is anti-biblical, in my opinion. But they did the hard work to start the shoe shop or the advertising agency or the, you know, local mom and pop grocery store, whatever it was. They worked their tails off. They worked the farm or the ranch. They put in the hours. They exhibit rugged individualism. They are rugged individualism. And because of them, we became the greatest nation in the history of mankind. Because of them, we weathered the storms of the last 50 years where too many of ours sold out to collectivism. Too many of ours turned on the principles that made the country great. And so these people that represent rugged individualism, they still are the heart of America, the backbone of America, the strength of America. They raised the kids that are still willing to volunteer and still willing to put their lives on the lines. They created the atmosphere with the family dinners around the table. They drug us to church and kept us grounded and many times beat our little rear ends when we were going off the deep end or headed in the wrong direction and managed to somehow keep us on the right track and understood that God's word does not return void and that sparing the rod would actually kill us instead of actually save our lives. So these people that are rugged individualism in America are still out there. Now, maybe some of them are, you know, They're in the golden years. They're in the fourth quarter. I know a lot of them that are in their 80s and literally in their 90s right now, sick to their stomach with the fact that a socialist Muslim has been elected, you know, mayor of New York, and they endured the last 4 years of the Otto Penn administration. But they have been they've got this just new juice, man. They've got this rejuvenation right now because of what Donald Trump is doing in our country. And they've enjoyed that for the last year, and then to have this little pipsqueak stand up and say that rugged individualism is bad and that we're going to trade that for the warmth of collectivism, which they know that term. They know what collectivism is. These people that understand rugged individualism also understand that collectivism means Marxism, means socialism, means bringing everybody down to the lowest common denominator and equal misery and killing the people that don't go along. They know enough about world history to have seen what's happened everywhere in the world where this pipsqueak's idea of the warmth of collectivism has been tried, the evil that it brings about. And so bring it on, Mandami, you Marxist mayor pipsqueak. You just keep saying those things because what you're doing is you are awakening the giant. You are just further awakening that part of America that slept for too long. And if you don't think these 80-year-olds still have some fight in them, you are mistaken. I'm telling you, my dad is one of them. If you don't think, I mean, I was just with an 83-year-old member of my board who is a Marine Baptist, you know, I don't think he'll get on to me for this. He's a Marine Baptist cussing pastor, okay? He's still got enough of that Marine in him that it comes out. He preaches the gospel better than maybe anybody I know, and he's still got as much fire in him right now at 83 as he had in his 20s. I'm telling you, he's Robert Duvall in the flesh. Anyway, I just spent a few days with him, and it reminded me that generation is not done. So maybe you're out there listening to me right now and you're in that, I don't know, 70s, 80s, maybe you're in your early 90s. And you've been wondering, you know, is God done with me? No, he is not. Every day above ground's a good day, and if you're not 6 feet under, we still need you in the fight. And you get what rugged individualism is. You lived through the tough times, and they made you tough. And now you've watched these soft pipsqueaks like Marxist Mandami, and you've watched them seize power in too many areas in this country. And they had our federal government for the last few years. Frankly, they still own the deep state, but Trump is cleaning them out. I'm telling you, this fight is not over. And in fact, I think we have the advantage. I mean, for sure we have the advantage of age and experience and most of the wealth. I know you got these young billionaires out there that are left leaning but we've got a lot of billionaires in this country, young and old, that are with us. That even if they inherited a part of it and then they were good stewards of it, they understand what's at stake when we pit collectivism against rugged individualism. So anyway, I didn't mean to use the whole segment here to Marxist Mayor Mandami, but I'm just telling you, every time he opens his mouth, every time he attacks private property, every time he attacks America, when you don't even have an American flag in sight at your swearing in, you got all these other countries. He is awakening the giant. He is the poison. He is the inoculation for the whole country. And sorry, not sorry to you New Yorkers, you brought this on yourself. You're going to experience significant pain as a result of this. You're kind of like the, I don't know if you remember getting a booster shot in college, you know, when you had to get the booster shot in the arm and that part of your arm hurt really bad for the rest of the day or maybe longer. But New York, that's going to be you, all right? You're the injection point for the poison. And so there's going to be pain felt where you are. But the rest of the body, the rest of the nation, Lord willing, I mean, this I'm praying this today. Lord willing, the rest of the body is going to experience the inoculation to the poison, and this will be a positive example of vaccines, Lord willing. Now, like everything else, it depends on us. It depends on what we do with it. I mean, God's giving us the opportunity here to learn from how bad collectivism is, and be riled up and driven to a righteous indignation, a righteous anger, to defend rugged individualism, to defend the principles of the Declaration at a moment in time where people are actually talking about it. So here we are. We have entered the 250th. We are now inside the 250th birthday of the nation. And for the next year and a half, we have the opportunity from now through July 4th, 2027, to talk about what rugged individualism is. What does it mean when we say we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? What does that mean? Pursuit of happiness certainly does not mean guarantee of happiness or redistribution of happiness. So it is not collectivism. This nation was not built on that. Pursuit of happiness is actually rugged individualism. So right there in the founding document of the country that we are celebrating for the next year and a half, we have a game plan for what will produce the greatest nation in the history of mankind. And at the heart of it is the pursuit of happiness, rugged individualism. And then you have, right after that, that to secure these rights, so even your right to pursue happiness, to not have that taken away from you by a guy like Marxist Mandami. Mandami, whatever, however I'm supposed to say it. But to have it not taken away from you by him, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now, you could argue that New Yorkers have given their consent for now collectivism. That New Yorkers have given their consent by electing this Yahoo, that they've given their consent for collectivism, and that they no longer want to be able to pursue happiness. They want to give up their property rights. They want to give up their ability to pursue liberty. You could argue that. But the trick here is we did not become just a pure republic where whoever you elect, suddenly they get to do whatever they want. That's a step in the process, but here's the truth. We're not just a republic. We're certainly not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic, so that when we elect people, they can only do what we said they could do in the Constitution, both federally, so for the United States government can only do what we give it the power to do, but also as a state. So I'm gonna suggest to you that it's time for us to start diving into our state constitutions and what kind of power does the state legislature give to the city. So while the federal government was created by the state legislature and state legislatures and answers downstream, backstream to the states, even though it's bigger, I guess you could say, the cities are not the ones that gave the power to the states. They do not hold the state accountable. The state holds the city accountable. This is why it's going to be so important in all of these investigations of the fraud and everything that's happened for us to have people that are willing to be whistleblowers on the state apparatus and city apparatuses that have implemented all of this fraud, not just in Minnesota, but across the country. So that, what I'm trying to say with that is Mondami does not have the right, just because he was elected by, frankly, a bunch of immigrants, not by native-born Americans, not by people that have been here long enough to still appreciate and understand, not by people that assimilated when they did come here as immigrants, but he was elected mostly by people that don't agree with the American dream. So does that mean that they then have the right to get rid of the Constitution itself and your constitutional guarantees? Your right to your property, Fifth Amendment protection of to not have your property taken without just compensation and only in cases of being used for public use, like a road or an airport or something like that, not just because government thinks a Somali daycare would be better than your home or your business. These are fundamental questions, folks, that we're going to be challenged to answer in 2026. What does a Marxist like Mondami have the right to do with the levers of power at the city level? What does your local commissioner have the right to do with the levers of power over your property, requiring you to come ask permission to add a home, add a room to your home, or perhaps add a home next door to the home that you have now for your sister or for your mother-in-law or whatever it might be? These are fundamental questions that we have the chance to address in 2026 because of the 250th. So the timing is perfect. We have a president who understands this and is going to be raising these questions throughout the year, and he's going to be pushing the envelope with things like the Venezuela, the arrest of the of Maduro in Venezuela. So when we come back from the break, we'll dive further into that. I meant to do that this segment. Sorry, I got carried away on the declaration, which I tend to do. But the president's going to push the envelope. He's proven that he is going to do everything he can to restore constitutional jurisdiction, to restore the greatness of America, the patriotism in America, and to restore respect for the American name and American citizens and the power of America all over the world. I guarantee you with 100% certainty and accuracy that Sunday morning, all over the world, in rooms all over the world, where nefarious characters might have been plotting or planning the kidnapping of an American citizen, the attack on an American citizen or American interest around the world, the conversation Sunday morning was very different than it would have been. Very different than it had been maybe on Saturday night before they went to bed. Guarantee you, there is a different level of respect for America, for Americans, and for this president. And these nefarious characters around the world are thinking twice before they strike against America, before they do something to an American citizen. So that's good. It's good for us. It's good for our country. It's good for our future. And just one of many areas that we have cause to celebrate today and thank God for a president that understands how to use power appropriately within his jurisdiction and in a just war way. We'll be back. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. You're listening to At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back at the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Man, I just feel like I'm not getting to all of it today. The time is flying by. That's okay, though. We'll get as much as we can in, and then we'll jump on more of it on Thursday. Phone number is 888-589-8840. You're welcome to call in on any of these topics that we are hitting. So many good news. Just to reiterate what we talked about so far, of course, the vaccine schedule being changed is a big, big deal, folks. This isn't just about health or a MAHA agenda item, you know, promise being fulfilled. This is a massive blow to the deep state. The experts who aren't, the idea of just trust your government, just trust these agencies that are all biased and compromised. This is a massive blow to that. And to have a president and, of course, RFK and some of these others that have been willing to stand up to that just speaks volumes. And the fact that they won, that this is actually happening, just big, 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 big deal. We could spend all day on it. We won't. Venezuela, Iran, two huge, huge history-making couple of days for both of these countries and for the rest of the world. I mean, this is massive. And I don't even think we can fully measure the repercussions of it. Tim Walz dropping out of the governor's race in Minnesota. Big victory there. I love Babylon Bee's headline, which was Tim Walz retires to spend more time in prison. I hope it turns out to be that way. Look, you've got to prosecute these people. You've got to prosecute these people or else you just get more of it. And everybody knows my number one choice, the all I want for Christmas is Anthony Fauci in chains. I mean, this guy needs to be perp walked in front of the world and put in prison for whatever days he's got left. Okay, so then of course, as I mentioned, every time Mondami opens his mouth and espouses the love of socialism and communism and all the other things that he's pushing, it is an advertisement for why we need to come back to the principles and why people need to wake up and we need to do a better job at educating Americans on the principles of liberty. So it's actually a good thing. It's the inoculation, hopefully, that leads to a wake up in America. So let's come back to Venezuela and Maduro, because, you know, this one, I think where I was definitely uninformed, and I'm uninformed on a lot of things. Can I just admit that to the audience? I'm no guru, okay? And I'm ignorant about things just like you. And ignorance is just simply a lack of knowledge in particular areas. And so we all are learning every day, and we should always take that approach. And so this was one that I needed to learn, and I'm still learning and trying to dive in. I was well aware of the thorn in the side that Venezuela was to us. I was well aware of the socialist collapse of the country and why socialism had destroyed what should be one of the wealthiest nations on the planet, and people should live better in Venezuela than most people places around the world if you just base it on natural resources. But that's why, I could spend all day on this too, that's why your political and economic systems matter even more than what your natural resources are. Just look at North and South Korea in comparison. So those things were sort of, you know, on the tip of my consciousness. I was completely unaware of how big of a stake China and Russia wanted in what they could do with Venezuela. I should have, right? I mean, we got a lot of things to think about, but I should have realized if you've got the largest oil depository in the world, if you've got all of these gold mines and all of these fantastic natural resources, that other nations would love to have control of your country and would love to get a slice of the pie, if not as much of the pie as possible. And I should have calculated the proximity to the United States and why, if Venezuela was being used by our enemies, it could become a foothold in the Western Hemisphere to not just be a thorn in our side and keep, you know, funneling drugs and all of the other things into our country that weaken us, but potentially even down the road, a military staging ground close enough to launch missiles and nuclear weapons at us. So that part, I guess, was somewhere in the back of my mind, but I didn't put it all together. And so when I first saw the headline, in fact, we were just going into our board meeting on Saturday. I said Sunday morning. I meant Friday night versus Saturday earlier. But anyway, We were just going into our board meeting for Patriot Academy on Saturday when this 83-year-old amazing Marine Baptist pastor guy that I was telling you about, he texted me before we even went into the meeting and said, "Man, this look at what's happening." And so that was the first clue I had of what had happened overnight. And suddenly all of these things started coming to light and coming together, and I realized, wow, this is absolute brilliance on Trump's part. Number one, he's legally entitled to do exactly what they did, just based on the narco-terrorism part, just based on the indictments and what the courts have given permission to go do, just based on the precedent in history of both Republican and Democrat presidents doing similar things. All of those things, he definitely had the green light to go in. Now, if we put this in context of military action, there's all kinds of discussions to be had by better experts than me. I don't think the War Powers Act is going to come into play at all, because you don't have a massive deployment of troops. You literally have a snatch and grab here. Potentially you have a deployment of troops or of assets in the region in order to further develop this plan, and you could trigger at some point the requirement for reporting to Congress and permission of Congress and all that. And the way all that works is when you go in with a certain amount of troops or a certain action, then you've got 30 days it's less than that in order to report to Congress, but then to get essentially a full briefing to Congress and permission from Congress and all these things. And all that comes back to the fact that constitutionally it is Congress who gets to declare war. That's not in question here. We all agree on that. So you've got this balance of powers, part of the separation of power and balance of power. It's part of the brilliance of the founding fathers, to where Congress gets to declare war, but of course the president is the commander in chief and has the ability to respond immediately when necessary, and to use the force of the United States for the interest of the United States. And so the argument, just step back for a second, if you can, remove yourself from this the particular facts in this circumstance, to kind of thinking about what would you want your president to be able to do quickly when necessary, and not have to wait on especially a divided Congress, but Congress in general, to come to a decision on some of these things. And so the concept is that has worked fairly well for America is that the president has the ability as commander-in-chief to act immediately. We empower him with that so that he can respond if we're attacked. He can respond if there's a need. He can respond in a situation where, you know, in this case, for instance, we knew that there were Democrats in Congress that would leak this to Maduro, that were friends of narco-terrorism. Imagine that. And we even have apparently evidence that that they did try to warn him in some of these high up Democrat offices, and therefore the president had to act almost unilaterally. I think there were Republicans in Congress that were given the heads up, and leadership in Congress. But my point is, you've got to, in order to operate as a nation that is trying to defend 350 million people and operate around the world, we have interest around the world, in order to respond to situations quickly, you have to empower the president with the ability to do that without Congress being involved in the initial action that takes place. And so the kind of the balance, the dance, is that if the president does that and then ends up with a ongoing presence or an ongoing deployment of our resources and our troops or our sailors or whatever it might be, then you've got to get Congress involved. And if it's over an extended period of time, at some point you do have to declare war. Now, let's be honest. We haven't declared war since World War II, according to the textbook definition of a resolution being passed by Congress saying we declare war. Now, I personally argue that you can declare war. The Constitution doesn't say here's the type of paper that you declare war with, or that you declare war with a resolution or any of those things. It just says the power to declare war is in Congress's hands. I, frankly, have always argued that the expenditure of money approved by Congress for the prosecution of a military action is de facto a declaration of war and permission by Congress to do so. And so in my humble opinion, in how a republic like ours works with this separation of powers and this balance of powers and this dance that we do in order to not concentrate all the power in one branch, I argue that Congress declared war, for instance, in the war against radical Islamic terrorism, when they stood on the footsteps of the Capitol and sang God Bless America, and they appropriated the money and basically said to President Bush, go get the bad guys, that was a declaration of war. I argue that every time Congress approves the expenditure of military dollars that are used in any way to prosecute and pursue a military action, that's an approval of Congress by spending the money to do so. And if they don't want that action to be approved or any further action in that region to be approved, at any moment Congress can come together and vote to withdraw those funds and not allow it to take place. Okay, so overall, what I'm trying to say is President Trump is in the right to do what he did, but there will be questions down the road depending on what happens with this vice president of Venezuela and whether or not we end up removing the vice president and end up, you know, literally propping up someone to run the country. Now, some people don't like that. Look, if you have a nation state that is within a 30-minute attack of the United States, that is allowing our enemies to operate and is allowing criminal elements and thugs and drug lords to run the country and to use the national apparatus, I want a president that is willing to step in and stop that from happening. We have a national security interest in that action. And in order to stop our enemies from being able to get that kind of a foothold or stop a narco-terrorist state from being able to operate in a way that ends up harming us as a nation. I haven't even addressed the socioeconomic stuff. I have not even addressed the fact that Hugo Chavez destroyed a great nation with bad principles like socialism, or that Maduro continued that and made it even worse. That part is, you could argue, humanitarian. I don't think that's the reason to go in, but it certainly has been a good thing. And you can see the people from Venezuela and in Venezuela celebrating as a result of that. They know the evil that they've been under. I forget the numbers now, the tens of thousands of torturing, of political prosecutions, of murders, of all the stuff that's happened as a result of bad policies and an evil man being in charge. Now, again, we could debate all day. At what point does that become a national security interest for the United States? If it was just that by itself, it might not. It might not rise to the level of a national security interest and the interest of the United States to do what we've done. But clearly, in this situation, all of these things—the national security interest of the United States, cutting off the foothold for our enemies, the level of resource that was being pursued by our enemies and being used against us, the sanctions, the drug traffic—I mean, all of it. When you put all of it together, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's like, wow, this was that's why I say this was a brilliant move, I believe, on the president's part. I think Marco Rubio has stood out through this whole process in an incredible way. He's made the argument to the media and to the world in a powerful way. I think it proves President Trump was right to put him in that position at Secretary of State. And I want to say this for J.D. Vance. I think J.D. Vance, who, you know, you got all these people that they just love a good fight, especially internally. And so what does this mean for Vance versus Rubio in 2028 and all this? Thank the good Lord that these guys, in both situations, Rubio, as far as I know, has not done anything to undermine J.D. Vance's ability to be a good vice president out of maneuvering for 2028. And J.D. Vance has not done anything to undermine Marco Rubio being a good Secretary of State and the best interest of the United States moving forward in order to maneuver for 2028. I believe that is the difference between politicians and patriots. These guys right now are living out, literally living out, the line in America the Beautiful, more than self, country loved. I could be totally wrong. There may be stuff going on behind the scenes and bickering and maneuvering that just hasn't come to light, but I don't think so. From what I'm hearing and from what we're seeing and from even some conversations that have been revealed from a couple of weeks ago, these guys are showing themselves to be statesmen. You ought to sit up a little straighter today. You ought to walk a little taller today as an American. And so, you know what? I'm proud of my country. It's been a long time since we've been able to say that. I'm proud of my president. I'm proud of the team that he's put together and how they're pulling together instead of tearing each other down. I'm proud of a Speaker of the House that is not bickering with them over this, but actually acknowledging the nuance of when something gets reported to Congress or gets the permission of Congress and all those things. He's acknowledging those things and talking about those things, therefore educating the American people, including me, on where those lines are. So anyway, I think we're seeing a fantastic display of statesmanship, of good leadership, of measured power, using that power in a good way for our country. I'm just seeing a lot of good, folks. What a way to enter 2026, huh? Man, fantastic beginning to 2026. It's going to get even better, I believe, folks. All right, we're out of time for today. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Hope you've enjoyed listening. You've been listening to At the Core.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.